everyone. Welcome to another edition of, actually, this is the first ever episode of Pondering Popper. This is going to be one of the sister podcasts to the Pioneer Perspective. This will obviously be one of the official podcasts of the MTG at Home Discord server. And I have two wonderful people here. Everyone here knows me as Brad, but don't worry, I'm not on this podcast. I'm simply here to hand the torch off to these two wonderful people. You guys should introduce yourselves. Who we got?
Hey, everybody. This is Jacob. On Magic Online, you might know me as Satan Raken, or on Discord and everywhere else, I'm known as Calikais, and most people call me Cali. So I'm going to go with that from here on out on the podcast. Kind of a Popper aficionado. Made a couple of top eights, a couple tournament placings, and I'm just running around in the queues.
Yep. Hi, I'm Henry. I'm Diego Brando on YouTube, Magic Online, and anywhere else where I have to put a username. Well, as mentioned, I upload YouTube videos. I regularly stream challenges. I've top-aided a few. I play pretty regularly, but yeah.
All right, and like I said, this is the first ever episode of Pondering Popper. We are very happy to have this this podcast. These are two incredibly knowledgeable individuals when it comes to the Popper format. And if you ever listen to the Pioneer Perspective and you happen to be coming over from that, or you just like Popper in general and you saw this pop up on your Spotify feed or whatever, welcome. We're glad to have you here. Like I said, I'm not going to be here after this. Unless these two fine gentlemen ever invite me on for whatever reason. I'm not the biggest Popper player, but hey, I can spout nonsense. But otherwise, I'm going to hand it off to them. Like I said, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for listening to this first ever episode of Pondering Popper. And I'm going to go. You guys, take care, enjoy yourselves, and have fun with it. Okay. Bye, guys.
Alrighty. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad. So, just getting a little bit into ourselves, I guess, Diego, is that cool?
Yeah, sure.
So here, I started playing basically in paper in about 2000 when flanking and banding and all sorts of keywords were just confusing the heck out of everybody, and put down paper cards for a little while, and then my buddy and I started getting into Magic Online, playing a bunch of Limited, and losing a bunch of money. So Limited had this feel where you just, everybody's kind of on the same playing level. And then every time I broke into other constructed formats, I was like, I can't deal with these rares. Took a little bit of a break for a while, got back into Magic Online, and with Planeswalkers and Teferi running afoot, I just decided that I wanted to do something cheap and kind of like streamline, more like the Limited feel. And I think that that's what Popper has been for me. So I like being able to spend, you know, 20 tickets on a deck, 20 bucks on a deck, and, you know, play it forever and have all these intricate interactions. It's pretty sweet. What about you?
Well, I started playing back in Shadows, which I believe that was 2016. But yeah, so I spent a couple of years just playing paper. Around the summer of 2018, I started playing online, just because it was a lot easier logistically. And then I kind of got hooked on how much I could play online, as opposed to like once a week go to an FNM, play three games. One of the online formats that caught my eye initially because it had a cheap entry cost was a Popper. So I ended up, I started playing with that, and that kind of just stuck to it. I've done a lot of other formats, but Popper is kind of the one I always come back to.
Yeah, man, so. I think that people that kind of get into Popper, they really love sticking to it once they're there, because it's kind of like, why do I need to spend $700 picking up a playset of Forced Negations and Ren and Six when I could be doing powerful things with crazy cards that cost like 10 cents.
You can spend $70 to buy a playset of Bonders Ornaments. Oh, wait, is that more than $70 now?
I believe that Bonders Ornament went down to like 9 or 8 tickets in the last week. There were some couple people in the Familiars Discord that were kind of watching it like a hawk. I guess that kind of brings up my next thing. What do you like to play the most?
Well, my favorite deck by far is Stompy. Played a lot of it before Savage Swipe, played even more of it after Savage Swipe. But I've also done a lot of Walls. I've done a fair amount of Slivers. I was really into, I think probably the last other deck that I was really into, probably the last blue deck that I was really into was a Jeskai Creature Light Jeskai Ephemerate back in Astrolabe. It was, I mean, it wasn't healthy, but that deck was a blast to play.
How did you feel about playing Jeskai Ephemerate now without Astrolabe, or like playing the Abundant Growth Jeskai Astrolabe that I made up?
I did. On one hand, I do like playing Jeskai. Is that what we're calling it?
We can just call it. Yeah, it's like Jeskai or like Jeskai. Or, you have to figure out how I pronounce the G at that point.
Yeah, I do like Abundant Growth, but I think at the same time, one of the things that was fun about Astrolabe became less fun when it happened every game was that you could just turn one, drop it, and then not have to worry about mana ever again.
Yeah.
Whereas without that, like needing to have that turn one forest or that turn one, it becomes a little more iffy, and you spend just a little more time setting up your mana base.
Yeah. So
but I think that
when you're playing in Astrolabe era, in Astro Summer, I guess, when you're playing like Jeskai Astro and you just go turn one Astro and then do your thing, it kind of felt like it didn't matter what the opponent did, you're just going to win. But when you're playing the Abundant Growth Jeskai list, it feels like no matter what the opponent did, you worked really hard.
Yeah.
Which is fun, though. And then you get to play like Korskai Fisher and Abundant Growth, and then your Korskai Fisher is a 1 green-white draw card, 2/3 flyer, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, there's definitely a lot of fun in even like building your own blank, like building your own Lab, building your own like Tron lock without Tron, or I know you're a big Familiars fan.
Yeah, I started Pauper playing like Is It Blitz because I started Magic Online again, playing a lot of just Gift Storm. And basically, I just liked the one-turn Kablammo combo kill. I really liked in Limited being able to use the 2 and a red +1/+1 double strike card and just like blast people with Enigma Drake. I actually remember one time in Limited, I was able to use the 3-mana 1/1 that makes 3 energy. And that can double itself, and I hit for 204, which was pretty sweet.
Yeah, Lester Stack Pummeler.
Yeah, Pummeler. I just blast you. So I try to avoid like combat math. Just want to either go over the top or sneak under with some sort of combo, or like everything that the opponent does doesn't matter. My one friend said that I basically don't want to interact with my opponents. So I started playing Is It Blitz, died a lot to Chainer's Edict, didn't like playing that, and then moved into Boros Monarch, which was pretty fun for a while. I really liked how you could just beat up the Fairies decks, but you know, you still lose most of the time to Tron, at least in 2017. And then I got trashed by 420 Dragon, who was playing Familiars. And then I picked it up and kind of like just watched 420 Dragons videos and Blood Pledge videos and moved on from there. And that was kind of like a, I would say like a 3-2 leaguer for quite a long time. Made my first 5-0, I think, in Jeskai Astro era. And Familiars was just getting torched by like the Astrolabe decks and all the super powerful things. But then when Mystic Sanctuary came out, I kind of like started grinding with that and then created a Familiars Discord and just started like playing way heavier than before and actually tweaking my own deck instead of just copying a list and just jamming it forever. And then now I guess I'm the Familiars expert, which is pretty sweet.
It's definitely been a similar-ish thing happened to me with Walls, at least. I mean, I definitely dropped the deck and didn't follow through. Right now, Apos is definitely the go-to person about Walls, along with, I never can pronounce his name or his username, but
Liz? Or Lysturgic Ninja?
Lysturgic Ninja, that's it.
It's some sort of, it's, I think it's Croatian or whatever, but it means like holy book. So it's like a riff on like the Bible or whatever, like this is the holy book or something.
Yeah, but he's definitely like, he has shown up with that deck. Like he, was it 2 challenges in a row or just 2 challenges?
I think he 2 weekends in a row top 8-ed, or like he won one and then second the other one 2 weekends in a row.
Yeah.
I know that you like took Caleb Gannon's Walls list and then you were just like refining it and playing it and refining it and playing it. And then like it started like peaking and then you created the Walls Discord.
Yep.
And then other people ran with it from there. Cause did you kind of take like a break for a while?
Oh yeah, I took 2 hiatuses really. I think one was after, I don't think it was after, it might have been, it was after the map ban.
You're just angry?
I was just tired. It was kind of just, okay, this doesn't seem like it's going to change anything fast. Yeah. But yeah, so that kind of, I took a break from that. And then when I came back, I did a lot of Flavor of the Weeks. And so most of my time was spent doing multiple takes with terrible decks. I don't play it a lot, but it definitely still has a place in my heart.
What do you think is, like, where you spend most of your time? Do you spend most of your time, like, if you're going to play Pauper, are you going to play the leagues, or are you going to wait for a challenge and, like, kind of just get it all out at once, get more time under tension, I guess?
Right now, I've just been doing the challenges. Part of that is I do like playing Spice decks. But at the same time, I also really like winning. Personal passion of mine. And the problem is, a lot of the time, at least prior to now, the only way that I could win was, like, I would just run with Tron. Because I'm both not very good at and not a big fan of, like, Delver Tempo decks. Or Fae Tempo decks. It's just not really my cup of tea. And so at the time, like, it was either you run Tron or you run Fae. And I was like, I at least like Tron a little bit more, or like playing Tron a little bit more, which is a lie. I like playing Tron until I play Tron against Tron.
Yeah.
At which point I severely dislike ever picking up Tron.
Would you say that the Tron mirror is worse than any other mirror?
I think so, because at least the land destruction mirror has the decency to be over very quickly some of the time, whereas the Tron mirror is almost always a never-ending nightmare. That, like, you know one person is probably winning, but it's not explicit enough to warrant a scoop.
Well, when you both have, like, 7 cards in hand, like, 30 mana, like, how do you know who's winning? The only way that you really win the Tron mirror is that one opponent gets Tron turn 3 and then Dinrivahor is the other opponent. Like, then, okay, you win, I guess.
The other method that I've seen is that you have more mystical teachings.
Yes, yes. So, I think if you're going to be trying to beat Tron with Tron, you're going to want to be on a 2-3, like a 3 mystical teachings package with that spicy main deck Pyroblast at this point.
Yeah, the main deck Pyroblast, I think I still see it, even though Fall from Favor is gone. That was because at the time, like, I justified that to myself with, like, I just kind of need to run this to prevent that lead from snowballing. But then after the Fall from Favor, it's like, oh yeah, it's just kind of generally a good idea because there aren't any other spells outside of blue that are really going to beat you most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not playing against a blue deck, all you have to do is loop Moments Piece.
Yeah.
And if you are playing against a blue deck, you're gonna be happy you have it.
Yeah.
So are you basically just a challenge Tron player at this point?
No, actually, I've run Stompy for, let's see. I know I ran it back on January 24th. I've been running, honestly, since I think I top 8'd the first challenge of the year, the Saturday, January 2nd challenge with Tron. Then on the January 10th challenge? On some challenge the next weekend, I absolutely failed with Tron. And I kind of just got fed up and I was like, okay, I scrubbed out, but it took 8 hours. Like, and I was playing for all 8 hours, and that's just not going to fly with me. So then the next week, I took land destruction, and that was almost as bad because I played the mirror 3 times.
Yeah.
And then walls twice. I still ended up top 32, but it was not, again, like, it wasn't, I still wasn't having fun, but I wasn't having fun in much shorter bursts.
Yeah.
Because my important matches would be over before the 45-minute mark.
I think one of the things that, just as a tangent, in Pauper, now that we have the Cascade spells, I think we have to just start calling it Ponza. Because You got the ramp, you got the land destruction, you got the fatties, you got the sandwich.
Yeah.
And before the Cascade stuff came out, it was just like this bad mono green, like, land destruction ramp deck that couldn't really go anywhere, and it didn't have Pyroblast, and it didn't have, like, alternate colors that could really matter. But now, like, the value from the Cascade creatures and Bonder's Ornament is just trashing the format, in my opinion.
I don't think that the deck is very good. I think it only has an excuse to exist because of how good the Cascade creatures are.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the justification for its existence. Because at its core, land destruction is not a strategy that is viable in Pauper.
I've talked to Raptor 56, who people might know as the trophy leader a couple seasons ago with Tron, but he said that he thinks that land destruction should not exist in Pauper because we don't have good lands. Like, all our lands either come in tapped or like you can't fight land destruction with it. And if the opponent has their natural nut draw of like turn two land destruction, turn two, three, four, like you can't do anything. There's just so many decks that are based around bounce lands that it's just like completely invalidated at this point. And then WotC just keeps creating things that make land destruction better to try to make Tron worse, except Tron just keeps being fine.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like land destruction's a massive like pain to play against, but it also doesn't have the consistency. When it does have a nut draw, it's going to like absolutely shred a bunch of decks, like any bounce land decks. And I know that especially after Fall from Favor got banned, like some of the mid range decks started coming back, which was real nice for land destruction. But yeah, it's just hard to kind of justify running bounce lands now that there is other like good value plays that can also invalidate the other mid range decks.
Yeah. So I mean, like, talk about the new value plays. We have a new set that just came out, and it looks like the most impactful card is going to be Behold the Multiverse. Have you played against this?
I have not.
So essentially, I started playing some limited, and I was like, oh my god, this card is really good. So you can foretell it on turn two and then cast it on turn three if you want to. So you're paying four mana over two turns, but you got to cast a four mana card on turn three and have a mana open, which is pretty good. And it's scry. So if anybody doesn't know, Behold the Multiverse is three and a blue for scry two, then draw two. And it has foretell. So you pay two and put it into exile, and then you can cast it from exile for one and a blue. Or in a familiar's deck, if you have a familiar, you can just cast it for a blue. And basically what it allows you to do is put this value card into the exile, and then when you're in a control mirror or a control matchup, you can just blast it on their end step, and then you either tap them out because they have to counter it, or you get to scry two and draw two, which is really big. So I've actually seen basically all the fairies decks are playing it. The UB Xtrops decks is playing it, and as a familiars player, I'm definitely playing four of it right now. It's pretty crazy. Yeah, still doesn't really help the Stompy matchup though.
Yeah, no. It's one of those things that like if you play on a certain axis, it doesn't really end up mattering. Like I play a lot of Stompy, I'll play like Slivers, sometimes I'll just play dumb fast combo. And at that point, it's just another mana that is spent not removing creatures. So it is, I do like the fact that it is a turn three play that leaves up one mana, which like blue decks and like blue red or blue black can use to make a play. Because we have so much cheap. We have so many cheap spells in Pauper. Like, you can take the turn off to foretell and then have the next turn cast it and still play another thing to not lose that much tempo.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, if I'm playing FAMs and I go turn one Evolving Wilds, you know, they go turn one Island, I go Evolving Wilds, crack, and they go turn two Island and wait. Then what am I going to do? I can't play Preordain on my turn, because they have a Spellsetter Sprite, or I can't play anything, they have a counterspell. So you just put that into exile. You used your mana and they didn't. It's pretty important.
Yeah, especially in such tempo-based matchups like blue versus combo or the blue mirror.
Another spot that I'm excited to try it that I haven't had much of an opportunity though is against the Walls deck, where like I'm going to be holding up interaction for their spells, but also if they don't do anything end of turn, I can draw two.
Yeah,
that seems pretty sweet to me.
Yeah,
versus like deep analysis, which is just okay, I have to tap out to draw two, and hopefully I draw something so that you don't kill me, and then on my next turn I can do something.
Yeah. Against, yeah, having instant speed, because before, like, deep analysis, if you're drawing four, that was kind of what you went for, because it has that flashback value and counter resiliency. But yeah, this also has that counter resiliency being instant speed, and you can just foretell it and not even have to worry about a counter on the turn you're foretelling it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was really dubious about foretell, but seeing it in limited, because I played a lot of Kaldheim limited before suddenly realizing, wow, I'm not really having fun drafting Kaldheim limited.
Yeah.
But one of the things that kind of came across to me was, well, A, two drops were garbage in the format, because you're always going to want to be foretelling something, but B, that foretell is kind of a more versatile mechanic than it comes across as.
Yeah, I mean, if you can play nothing on turn two by foretelling the Pac-Mate, the Cerulean Pac-Mate, I think it is called, which is a three and a green for a 3/3 that enters the battlefield, draws a card, but has foretell of a one and a G to cast it from exile. So, like, if you can do that on turn two, and then turn three, you draw a card and have a 3/3. Like, a three mana 3/3 was already good. And now you have a two mana 3/3 that draws a card.
Yeah.
It's pretty bonkers.
Yeah, it's also really nice. I don't know if I've seen it. I haven't checked out a lot of the Cascade lists that aren't running, or the Don Ponza Cascade lists, though I know they've been getting more and more popular, especially as people realize that playing the Land Destruction Mirror is not fun. The Cascade, it's also really cute in that deck, because you have an early play that also isn't a terrible hit off Cascade.
That's true. Do you want to go into the different Cascade decks? It's been interesting.
It is interesting. I don't have a bunch of knowledge, so I'll let you take point on that.
Sure. So, you know, what was the set that Commander Legends. Something? Commander Legends? I don't know. What's the three characters for it?
CMR.
That's what I thought. Okay, so when CMR got released, they put out Boarding Party and Annoyed Aldasaur, and then an 8-mana card that nobody plays. But one's a 6-mana 6/3 with haste with Cascade, and one's a 7-mana 6/5 Trample with Cascade. Yeah. And the fact that it's Trample is ridiculous. It's like, hey, you can't deal with this. Also, it has Reach.
Yeah, Reach is so excessive.
So what in the world is going on? Like, if you're a Fae player, they're like, here's my 6/5 Trample with hate with Reach. Deal with it.
Yeah, and then they have like the... Or there might be a must counter coming down from it.
Yeah, and then they have like the nut draw of like Aldasaur into Boarding Party into Moldrifter or something stupid like that. It's just like, okay, I give up. But essentially, there's like most of these Cascade lists are banking on Arbor Elf and Utopia Sprawl and Wild Growth. And so they can go like turn one Utopia Sprawl, or no, turn one Elf, turn two Sprawl, Arbor Elf on tap, and then tap. So that's four mana that they can make on turn two. So then they can either Thermokarst or Asthmos you, which is not very fun from someone who likes keeping their lands. But
from avid bounce land player,
from someone who likes playing bounce lands, I am very upset with this entering the format, but you got a deal. And then they can use those Arbor Elves and all the extra mana to like pump up the Bonder's Ornaments to draw cards. So they are drawing cards as fast as Tron is drawing cards with these Bonder's Ornaments. Plus they're like blowing up lands and just like slamming big dumb things. But we've got a couple of different styles. There's like a regular like red-green version, which is like Stone Rain and Thermokarst and Acid Moss. So it's like straight up land destruction version, or like Ponza. And then in the last deck dump, there was a Jund version that's only playing 8 land destruction spells main, but it's got four cast down and two chainer's edicts.
And then yeah,
And then we go sideways, and there's a deck. There's a Sultai Cascade deck that Zimplify made.
Yeah, have Zimp you seen this? Pile.
He calls it the Zimp Pile, and it relies on ramping with Coiling Oracle and Llanowar Visionary to play Moldrifter and Annoyed Altasaur, and then just like gets back in the game versus aggro by having two Weather the Storms and three Pulse of Murasa in the main deck, along with this is GMAO MTG's list from the last dump, but he's playing three stuff snuff outs, and I wonder if he has another one in the sideboard. Does not. So he can just snuff out anything and then just blast out a Weather the Storm for like 15 because he's got so much mana. It's crazy, but this deck is not playing Sprawl and all those things. It's just like a Sultai value craziness, which would have been possible previously, I don't think.
Oh, definitely not.
I think like Altasaur is what keeps it together.
Yeah, just having such a powerful play against blue that lets you outvalue them.
Yeah.
That keeps them... it's a big mana spell that, like, they're going to... It's a big mana spell without the weakness of a big play, whereas, like, a counter spell and you're blown out for relatively little investment.
Yeah.
They're going to need two counter spells, or... So it's a big impact play that doesn't have that weakness to counterspell. Also, like, not spell stutterable unless you have six other Fae on board, which...
Yeah, it's not going to be a thing.
But I don't think I've ever seen it happen and then cast an Annoyed Altasaur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been crazy because I think in my mind, like, the Cascade spells have had a massive impact on the format because they've pushed the Ponza deck, and the Ponza deck means that there's a huge push in playing Dimir Fae because of Snuff Out. So then because Snuff Out is good, now we have this Sultai Pile deck. Because Snuff Out is good, but the Sultai Pile deck is just playing Snuff Out along with a bunch of life gains so they can play as many Snuff Outs as possible.
Yeah.
And then because Ponza is good, we also have a ton of walls and like Mono Blue Fae or Mono Blue Delver and like Blue Black Delver or Ubi X drops. So it's very interesting to see it develop.
Yeah, I think you're right that like Ponza is kind of the biggest shakeup, even if it's not the best deck. Like, it's such a undeniable force in the metagame. Like, it was for quite a bit. Like, it was showing up. I think it still does on Sundays. The Europeans are a little bit ahead of us on the Tron over Ponza thing. So the Saturday challenge typically has a much bigger Tron count than Ponza count, but like almost every Sunday it's been and I said this as a joke, and then somebody went and checked the data and they're like, no, you're absolutely right, but there's like consistently like two or three more Ponza pilots than Tron pilots.
Yeah. Which,
especially when mid-range wasn't really back because Fall from Favor was so prevalent, it's like, what are you trying to target? You're more likely to run to the mirror than a Tron deck.
What's the most crazy thing is that in the Super Qualifier, Land Destruction was 14.7% of the meta, and the next highest percent was Tron, which was 10%. And then like Fae, and then it drops off from there. But it's like everybody. I don't know if everybody saw Yamakiller that top two'd a challenge with like Ponza, but I think the thing is that Ponza is kind of a Timmy deck, I would say.
Absolutely.
Where you just slam stuff and then you like get the cackles when it goes right, you know? but it's like, if you go Althasaur into Boarding Party, you kind of freak out because it's amazing. Like you hit the lottery, but it's not good. It's not a good deck. The raw match, the match win percentage was like 40%.
That was abysmal.
It doesn't go well for you.
It's so glass cannony because you're relying on that Arbor Elf, and you're relying, you have to prop up your cascade spells by running all these terrible cascade hits.
Yeah. It's just insane. Like, but sometimes you roll the, I think it's like in that event specifically, people wanted to roll the dice to win.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the point in playing a 10-round tournament and trying to grind out all every advantage when you could just like, okay, I opened the correct 7 10 times. Yeah. So it's interesting. I see it less now in leagues, but I don't know. I kind of bombed that event.
Yeah, that was, I'm glad I did not play that one, gotta say. Tough. Which week was that?
It was January 23rd. That was the MTG at Home Pauper event.
Yeah, I remember doing that, or casting that. Did I top 8 that Sunday? I'm trying to remember.
That one was not recorded. I think that was the one that had, it was not recorded in the sheets or whatever, but who knows? I think that was when you got the Stompy top 8, maybe?
So it was on the, it was 7th place with Stompy that Sunday.
Nice.
Yeah, no, sweet. I remember seeing Land Destruction show up so much, and I'm like, okay, now's a good time to play spells 2 CMC or less.
Yeah.
Quirion Ranger, I remember I had the kind of inverse Land Destruction cackles because I played it against, I kept 2 Quirion Ranger hands against Land Destruction, and just kind of, it wasn't very fun for them, but they knew what they were signing up for.
Usually I'll open a match with like, good luck, have fun, or hey, good luck. And then as soon as they play Arbor Elf Utopia Sprawl, I say, hey, please don't pair versus me ever again.
Yeah, no,
the moral of the story is that Ponza is not good, but it's good enough, and that's what matters. Because the people that are playing it are the Timmies, and they just want the high highs, and they don't care about the lows. You know?
Yeah.
So, in the way that I try to build the decks, or the list that I'm, like, working on, and it's just that I want to have the most consistency possible, and try to, like, win via consistency over a long period of time, whereas the Ponza deck is just, like... Okay, how did I shuffle?
Consistency be damned. Let's see if I can just be absurd.
I think that if you want to play dice, go play dice. Like, let me have my lands, man.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, blowing up a land doesn't give me that same one land spy high. Proper one land spy. Not talking about no land spy. Oops, all spells. Proper one land spy. You can tell it's Pauper One Land Spy because it's significantly worse.
Yeah.
It doesn't give me that. Like, it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like looking at a, like, hard, long assembled, like, fight through probability or, like, barely scraping along. It's just kind of, I had a land destruction spell and now they lose, kind of. Unless they do well and you had no follow-up because you don't have any card manipulation outside of Bonder's Ornament.
Yeah.
And the inherent card advantage from Cascade. I think the Cascade creatures might be, obviously I think they're less because of my own personal biases, but it's one of those things that kind of fell to the side or kind of didn't get as much attention when
post
commander and during the commander spoiler season. but still had as big an impact or are as like problematic or impactful, because I am very much on the record saying that I think Fiery Cannonade was possibly one of the worst downshifts that we've had, and we've had some terrible downshifts.
Well, the interesting thing about Fiery Cannonade is, like, obviously it makes Tron just, like, drastically better.
Yeah.
But right now, only Tron and Faye are playing it. And
yeah,
it's kind of hard to say whether or not Faye should even be playing Fiery Cannonade over Swirling Sandstorm. It's like, why would you play that in your deck? But
I think,
I don't know. So it definitely trashes Stompy, but there's not a lot of like Jeskai Ephemerate around.
So. I swear that's not my only reason. I swear. Yeah, but I think it's one of those things where it's fundamentally problematic, but in execution, unless we see a meta that it plays into it, because I think it's strong enough that it wouldn't take a lot of meta shifting for it to be really dominant. But in reality, we don't live in that meta.
Yeah, the thing is that as soon as it came out, the lists are going to change because of it.
Yeah.
So it's never gonna show that it changed things, because no one cares that you can't play all these 2/2s anymore because of Fiery Cannonade. They're just like, oh, I guess Stompy's not around. Or, oh, I guess like nobody's playing White Weenie. That's weird. But...
That's never happened.
It's like definitely being a suppressive force. But I do think that, I mean, obviously Fall from Favor was pretty bad, but I still think that the Cascade spells are just like really making a huge impact that, like you said, nobody really saw coming. People were like, oh, I can put this in Tron, that'll be silly. But then a few people started playing Ponza and I just kind of like kept going.
Yeah.
Which makes me sad. But yeah. how did you feel about the Fall from Favor format and the ban? Did you play Fall from Favor format?
I did. I played it precisely for about a week. And then I played a game where I cast 2 Fall from Favors and my opponent cast 3 all on the same creature. And I decided I didn't want to play Fall from Favor meta anymore.
What was interesting about the Fall from Favor meta is that it actually has shifted the way that I've tried to develop the list that I'm trying to run and the way that I've been trying to play them out. From a familiar's perspective, the list plays Godfarrow's Faithful, which is an 0/4 that whenever you play a blue, black, or red spell, any Grixis spell, you gain 1 life, and I used to just like slam that turn 1 against fairies because that's going to block their ninjas. But then, you know, Fall from Favor comes out, I slam a turn 1, they Fall from Favor it, and then my life is over. It's like the worst possible feeling, because like it didn't do anything. I can't attack with it. It's not saving the day. So I eventually just like moved more towards like a instant speed interaction deck. And put a bunch more like Last Breath in to try to like play a bit of an instant speed control. And that's interesting to see that Behold the Multiverse is fitting right into that kind of an idea. It's like, I don't have to commit if you're not committing. Even though now I can just slam a Seagate Oracle on turn 3 because there's no downside.
It's definitely, there are a lot of examples of when people will shift a deck because of like a card, and then after that card's banned, they still like shift has been successful enough, and that they just end up keeping it that way.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think it takes a lot of force to move a deck list. When I first started playing Magic, and especially Pauper, I would just like find a list and then just like jam it. And, you know, we both know that that's not really a good way to fight a meta. But if you're just playing casually, you don't really know very much about a meta. So what are you going to do? You just like play a list and hope it works.
Yeah. Usually, a lot of the time, like for certain challenges, I would procrastinate until the day of the challenge, realize I hadn't put together a deck, and then find a list and throw out the sideboard. And just go in and hope I could make it up as I go along. And to an extent, that did work. That I literally picked up Tron the day before I top 8ed with it. At the same time, that's not particularly impressive because it's Tron. And the only match that you really need to think about is the mirror. And to an extent, Faye. But it's definitely, like, if you want prolonged success, you really need to, like, after every league, take a look at your list and figure out what's showing up and what you need to change to deal with that. Like, I know my, like, the Just Guy Ephemerate list I played back in...
two summers ago?
Yeah. Oh, God, it was two summers. Oh, man.
Sucks, because I remember it fondly, like, weirdly fondly. I'm like,
I hated
that, but I also really want to play it again, because I think I could do a better job.
It's so it's so weird. Like, there's so many, again, like, this is kind of the thing about Pauper in general for me, is, like, I've stuck through it with so many miserable metas. Like, absolutely terrible metas, but, like, I'll still remember, like, games and decks fondly from them. Like, yeah. Even if, like, the overall experience, like, I can't think of a time where we've had a meta that I can unequivocally say, I don't think I used that word right, but
I think that was right. Depends on what you say next.
That was fun to play. Or that it was fun to play, like, for extended periods of time. Like, not just, like, I play a game with this card, oh, it's kind of fun, and then it just gets so repetitive that... But at the same time, like, I've kept coming back and kept playing decks. I don't know.
Do you think that's the allure of Magic, or it's the allure of Pauper?
I think it's kind of a Magic thing in general, but I've never had it the same way with Pauper, because it's not really a thing with Standard, because, like, you don't... It's cycles, like, you don't...
Yeah, I think the thing is that with Pauper, it moves relatively slowly, so there's, like, time to understand the format, and then you feel more invested in, like, tweaking your own deck to make a difference in fighting against the format itself, because if I come into it, I know that there's, like, only one or two cards that are going to change in the next 3 months or, like, maybe 10 months. So I just have to make some tweaks and figure out what other people are doing. But if I'm playing in Modern, every 3 months, tier one power level deck changes. Or, like, someone comes up with another broken combo that you didn't prepare for. Or someone's playing, like, mono white enchantment prison control, and you're just like, where did this come from?
Yeah, I was just actually about to say about, like, Modern and Legacy. And I think what's different in Pauper, like, Pauper will get busted stuff introduced, yeah. But it's not necessarily, like, strictly, oh, you have to play this just outclasses this style or this particular set of cards now. Obviously that's happened, but, like, Astrolabe and Mystic Sanctuary, they didn't, like, replace any cards that would have existed in those styles of decks.
Yeah, they just made kinda mono blue five color better.
Yeah, it just enabled for shenanigans, whereas, like, in Modern, you'll have, like, Planeswalker decks, or Modern or Legacy, you'll have, well, Legacy now, Planeswalker decks, and then, oh, we released Oko, and it's like, oh, you have to run this now. Or, yeah. Oh, they released Renin 6, gotta run that now.
I guess you can't play Deathrite Shaman or whatever the one ones that matter.
Oops, Uro's out. Yeah, Deathlord Shaman's a 1-2, but I remember Mother of Runes got subbed out in Legacy for a while for Giver of Runes, even though it was almost strictly worse just because it survived Ren in 6.
Wow.
But yeah, I did used to play a fair amount of Legacy. I know Pauper's been called Legacy Light for a while. Yeah. And honestly, I don't know if I see the comparison, to be honest.
I think the thing is that people consider Brainstorm the legacy card. And yeah. In Pauper you can play Brainstorm. But yeah. You know, most decks aren't playing four Brainstorm.
Yeah, and like yeah, there's counter like there's a lot of the same cards legal, but like there's not a lot of legacy decks that play counterspell, like hard counterspell.
Or core Skyfisher.
clearly you haven't seen the new Teemer plus white Delver with Core Skyfisher.
Hmm.
It trades with Delver.
It can pick up Astrolabe.
God. Oh, poor Legacy. I feel so bad that it still has to deal with Coco and Lave. And,
oh, the man. Funniest thing is seeing cards that are just like supremely overpowered in Pauper. Everyone in Modern and Legacy is like, make it stop! Like, get rid of Mystic Sanctuary, get rid of Astrolabe. And we're like, yeah, we told you. Like, how did we get that card?
Oh god, Mystic Sanctuary. But, yeah, like, it's so, not that I didn't...
Mystic Sanctuary was... It's one of those things where I'm like, I wish that I had a turn 5... I had a turn 4 kill still, because that was awesome. But yeah. It was brutal to be deprived locked and stuff like that, and it's just like an like infinite card. But I think the most brutal part about Mystic Sanctuary for me was the comboing, because no one would scoop, and I would always have to just go for it. So I'd be playing. I got to the point where I was so fast, like clicking around, that if I like in game one, my first turns and all my actions would take like 2 minutes. And then I would win game one at 15 minutes left on clock because the combo took so long. Because yeah. I'm just like, flicker, trigger, flicker, trigger, flicker, trigger. So if people aren't familiar with it, Mystic Sanctuary is a card that says that's an island. And if there's three other islands other than itself, when it comes into play, it comes into play untapped. And then if it's untapped, you could put target instant or sorcery on top of your deck. So you can flicker... With three lands in play, three islands plus sanctuary and two familiars, Ghostly Flicker costs one, and you can flicker Moldrifter and the sanctuary to get back flicker and draw a card. So you just like loop through your deck with that. But if you have 40 cards left in your deck and your win condition is the last card, you have to flicker 40 times and then complete whatever the win condition is. So if you have to mill your opponent 40 cards, you have to flicker another 20 times, which is just ridiculous.
There was a brief period where I played familiars pretty avidly, and that was in the like week or two when both Astrolabe and Mystic Sanctuary were legal.
Yeah, that was fun.
That loop was so efficient.
Oh, yeah, man. Where you just... Well, I did that too a little bit. But I don't know. I have a problem personally where like if I find a deck and I think it's working, I'll make some tickets and then I'll burn like twice that many tickets just trying to make the deck work in a different way.
I mean, I played a bunch of challenges with Stompy where I removed Elephant Guide and Solana Ledgewalker. Because I absolutely despise Elephant Guide. I mean, that's the thing. Like, sometimes decks move so slow. Like, I honestly think Elephant Guide is just outdated tech at this point, but I don't have... Like, one of the issues is our card pool is smaller, especially our playable card pool.
Yeah.
Like obviously we have way more sets than Modern, but like we don't have nearly the like amount of powerful cards just from the constraints of being common. But it's so like we there just aren't that many cards to fit into Stompy.
Like, yeah.
The closest I would say is Wild Mongrel, which, I mean, I love Wild Mongrel, don't get me wrong, but without an abundance of strands, and especially because it's just not that great with Savage Swipe, there's not really a good reason to be running Wild Mongrel.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's the same thing where I don't particularly like River Boa either. I think
but
it's
so much blue that it kind of helps now, at least.
Yeah, I mean, that's the concession I eventually had to make is like, I don't think I can really put my feelings about regeneration tacked onto this. I just have to think of it as unblockable.
Yeah,
and that just kind of made it because, especially, I think I like it a lot more post cast down because. Before cast down, literally every single piece of removal, blue, black, Delver, ran, killed it.
Hmm.
Because you would run Echoing Decay, Agni Warp, or Snuff Out. And sometimes Tendrils of, what was it? The one mana bad Snuff Out?
Ghastly Demise?
Ghastly Demise. I believe that says don't or can't regenerate.
Hmm. I don't know. Or you could, like, defile it or whatever.
Yeah, like you have defiled. There was just so much removal that it didn't deal with. And even in matchups where it was, like, good, like against blue-red, you could still, like, if you play it turn two, you open yourself up to such a major blowout if they just untap, play a reds, or play a mountain, and scrat or bolt it.
Yeah, it seems like when you're playing aggro, you actually have to do more thinking because you have to try to figure out how to not get blown out.
Oh, absolutely. I honestly think aggro is a lot harder than a bunch of decks in the format.
You have to know your mulligan, know your opponent. There's a lot to think. But I mean, sometimes you just open two mountains and eight burn spells and you win.
Yeah. I think there's a preload. You don't need to be Einstein to play three Burning Tree Emissaries into a Nest Invader. But it is like there's a lot of I think game two as aggro is one of the harder matchups to play in any because you need to know what your opponent brought in and what hands they're keeping post side. Mm.
I didn't consider that. Like, I usually think about what is my opponent going to be bringing in, but not like why. What kind of hand are they going to keep? That's a poignant point.
Basically, by their turn two, I want to know in game two. I want to be at least remotely or at least somewhat aware of what their hand looks like. I want to, because you can tell when you get to the point where you know the deck lists, again, with Opera kind of moving a little slower, it is easier to get a good sense of what decks are going to be playing, at least main deck. So by turn two, you kind of have to know you can discern what your opponent has in hand. I'm saying it weird, but
yeah, you know, based on their actions.
Yeah, you need to know
what you think that they are going to try to do to stop you, so you can try to play around the things they're going to do to stop you. That makes sense.
Yeah. And yeah,
it's like I always try to play around Spellcetter Sprite and Savage Swipe.
Oh, I play around Savage Swipe. Just play creatures out. Oh, poor
so,
too familiar.
Oh no. Yeah, the
the
weeks after Savage Swipe was released were really, really poor for me as a familiars player. I was like, wait, I can't just jam this? No.
Yeah, it was so much there were so many matchups that just became so much better. I could now win against elves and could win against familiars.
And Affinity. It's just deals damage. It's not, is it not, is a fight or is it deals damage?
It's Fife.
Oh, okay. It is, so you can't just like blast an enforcer.
Affinity is still a. I still stand by Affinity being the worst matchup, just because they have a great main deck matchup against Swipe and a great sideboard plan with Kirkclan.
Mm.
Like, you just can't beat Kirkclan Shaman. But
so,
yeah.
What do you when you discuss like tier levels, do you normally talk about like meta share or power level?
I think it's you have to factor in a bit of both.
All right, so
that's kind of.
I think we should try to come up with like a picture of what the format is right now. So, I think I usually talk about like kind of like mostly power level format, but obviously if there's like a high power deck, like I would say Familiars is high power, but it's not really like a high meta share. It's like a 0.05%, just me in there meta share. So it doesn't really hit the tiers.
Yeah.
I would say, like, you know, I think the top power level decks are like the Tron and Fae decks.
Absolutely.
And then I would say that I don't think there's any aggro deck that's like in the top power level.
Definitely not.
And they're all mostly going to lose to Tron.
Almost, yeah, no, especially post Cannonade. Like, Cannonade was such, honestly, one of the things. Like, yeah, Cannonade's great against aggro, but Cannonade's also really potent against a lot of Fae draws.
Yeah.
Especially as Tron, where they're really trying to play it out and get under you. Like,
yeah,
with Delver or Fae. And you can punish that so hard with a Teachings target. Get played at instant speed, get around those counters.
So you've got, like, Tron and Fae decks at the top. And then as a counter to those, we've got, I think the Walls Cascade or Walls deck is kind of like the straight up counter to Tron, but it's going to be especially losing to Snuff Out. Because if they're Snuff Out, you're like your 2 mana or 3 mana big wall mana guy, it's going to really set you back.
Yeah. Also, it makes Freed so much worse. Originally, I just played 2 Galvanic Alchemists specifically because it was so much more. It was so much better against removal because you can't blow out Soulbound like you can Freed. It's still on the field even if you've removed its Soulbound target, and it can Soulbind when another like Axebane Guardian enters the battlefield.
Hmm.
But yeah, because the bind gets, the bind reopens every time the target is no longer soulbound. Dead. But yeah, I think one of the things, I don't think metashare, I think other decks metashare has to be factored in when you're calculating tier lists.
Yeah, I would say like a while ago, we had our 1-2-3 lists, which was like a Rock, Paper, Scissors, the Poffer, which was Boros, Monarch, Is It Fae, and Tron. And now we've got like Tron and the like 3 different types of Fae. And then I would say Mono Blue's not played quite as much, but Tarts is doing really well with it. And then you've got like the Boros, like below that is like the Boros decks. Potentially Boros Monarch still can be around, but like, they're still being, those are being held down by like land destruction and walls, I think.
Yeah. I'd say like Boros, like before it was, as you said, the Rock, Paper, Scissors, but right now, like especially in Fall from Favor. In Fall from Favor, if you were playing Boros, it was just laughable.
Yeah.
You were playing at a much slower rate for the Monarchy, and you couldn't even protect it as well. You needed a creature out. Whereas you don't need a creature out to play Fall from Favor and protect the Monarchy.
And then we have decks like Stompy and Boggles. And I don't know, I guess Heroic would be the other like premier aggro deck.
I'd say Heroic's lower, but I am very
I guess Stompy and Boggles would be like, for aggro decks, right? They would be tier one aggro, and then tier two would be like heroic and affinity. And affinity like kind of slides up and down based on how much hate there is, how many gorilla shamans people are packing.
Definitely.
Because it's just like, if there's red decks being played, affinity can't win. And if there's not, then affinity will crush you. Because if their mana base is developed, then they're going to be attacking. So you have to manage that, and then all of a sudden they fling you to death. So and they have every single sideboard card, because they can play as many red and blue blasts as they want. They can play anything, basically.
Play those gorilla shamans for the mirror.
Yeah, and then our bad, but still highly played, I guess, at least in the leagues, aggro deck would be like burn. And then you got like crazy, I guess elves is something that's not played a lot.
Yeah,
but it's super good against Tron.
Yeah, it's super good against Tron. It is, again, it definitely lost percentage points with Fiery Cannonade, because they're now losing one to two other elves because they can no longer, a Timberwatch elf will have to save itself or die.
Mm-hmm.
Like before, Electricery happens, you save two elves with that Timberwatch.
And the Tron opponent could still be main decking or sideboarding cast down so that they can play cast down on turn two for your mana elf and then like Fiery Cannonade you on turn three potentially.
Yeah, I mean, you have all the colored mana in the world with Bonder's Ornament and Prophetic Prism. Like, why stop at four colors when you can run all five?
Yeah, it seems like the rock, paper, scissors isn't like really three decks now. I would say it's oddly not power level based. I would say it's like Tron, Fey, and then you've got Walls beats Tron, and then Fey beats Walls. So that's like rock, paper, scissors. But then all of a sudden off to the side is like, hey, I'm going to Ponza you. And then Ponza can just like nut draw Tron or Fey, but cannot beat Walls whatsoever.
I honestly don't see Ponza being Fey that often. The only reason I would say like Walls.
Oh, I do. I have actually. Yeah, you.
For scissors, is because it is like it and Ponza are weak to a wider variety of decks. Like they line up. Like the thing about those top three, like rock, paper, scissors, was that they had a good meta share outside of that. Like obviously you could have like.
Yeah, they could like Boros beats Fey and everything else but Tron. And Fey beats Tron but not Boros but beats everything else, and then Tron beats I guess like beats Boros Monarch but can lose to Fey because of counterspells. So Ponza is like, you're right, they're not good against Fey because of like the cheap counterspells and the easy ways for it to get mana. Especially like mono blue, but
cheap spells. Just you don't even need counter. Just cheap spells. Like, if it makes stumbling that much worse, like you can't fire off a land destruction spell turn three against Fey, because by that time they've probably already pondered set up another land because you telegraphed with your turn one, like forest nothing. Because Land Destruction's got hell of a lot more meta share than Stomp Your Walls. So
yeah, I remember in Astrolabe, like either Bogles or Stompy would win like generally every challenge.
Yeah,
but Jeskai Astro was like 40% of the meta, and people were like, it's not a problem. They're losing. It's like, yeah, because you can hard target it and get lucky.
Yeah.
If you hard, and then it's like if you hard target the main problem, you can win. And the Jeskai Astro lists also had to use their sideboard and their main deck to hard target whatever they're going to try to win against. So they had to either try to beat the mirror or not lose to aggro, and then you're going to just lose the one or the other. But I know the Stompy was like easily could go under them anyway.
Yeah. That was actually one of the things was that's why Creature Light Jeskai fell out of favor so hard, because it just had, it dominated the mirror.
Yeah.
It just was so bad against aggro comparatively to the Seeker of the Way deck.
See, I need to make a creature heavy guest guy list with Seeker of the Way. But I can't figure out how to make it happen, so we'll work on that. what do you think is going to happen with the new set? We've got Behold the Multiverse, but the thing is, there's very impactful cards of all these dual lands.
Yeah, I think somebody's going to figure out what to do with those. It's not going to be me. My first thought was, wow, this is the biggest buff one land spy has gotten in years.
Well, you still have to like
and mulligan.
Yeah, my friend Blue Stalker has been trying to play one land spy and did play it in the challenge to a pleasant 1-3 drop. So didn't go super well there, but it is nice that you can cast your you can land grant for it and also cast Dark Ritual.
Yeah, it's nice that you can actually cast spells.
Yeah.
As opposed to the usual one land spy strategy of maybe cast a Wild Cantor and then lose.
Yeah. The thing is that Dark
Ritual, get it countered and lose.
What I'm seeing is that these dual lands are going to be affecting pretty much only Snuff Out decks and Skred decks.
Still.
So what's getting a buff? Fae. And 4 days, shitty Cascade decks.
Yeah, 4 days after Helheim released, I was playing again, sometime after, that was significant enough, I ran into a deck playing, or a blue-black deck playing Dismal Backwater, and I...
Did you just laugh?
I kind of just died inside. I was like, no, don't. Stop.
Well, like we were talking about, some people don't update their deck lists.
Yeah.
But I've seen blue-black Delver with Snuff Out as early as turn one and Counterspell turn two, which is pretty important. I also tried a Jeskai list that didn't go super well, but I didn't actually put any Fiery Cannonades in it, so that's my bad. But having every single land matter for Skred is important. It's still not as good as, like, I have Skred for 3 on turn 2 because of Astrolabe, but it's pretty good. So I think that's going to be a big deal. And then, obviously, now the Fae decks have, like, adapted to all slamming the Monarch, too, which I don't even think that Fall from Favor being banned nerfed them. Still insane.
It just changed. Now they run Azure Fleet Admiral.
Yeah.
So Monarchy didn't get any worse. They just had a different rate for it.
Yeah.
They still have access to the Monarchy.
The only thing that banning Fall from Favor did was make it so that I can play Faithful on turn one and not feel bad about it. At least in my eyes.
It made it. Yeah. I mean, again, one of the things about Fall from Favor was the best counterplay was to play your own Fall from Favor.
Yeah, or just not play to the board, basically, which is why the Snuff Out decks became so important. Yeah.
Well, then they would just do it on their own creatures, especially with cheap Fae lists, because even removing your creature.
Well, you hold up removal until they play something, and then you play like 6 spells.
Simple.
That's basically, I don't know, it's interesting how, like, a single card in the format can completely change how you're going to do things.
Yeah.
So I wonder what the next thing is going to be. But I think that Behold the Multiverse is going to be one of those things right now, at least for people who are playing blue.
Yeah. I'm definitely interested to see how that shakes out.
I'm on 4.
Yeah. I think all time, again, it didn't really... put in many build arounds, I don't think.
No. I mean, I think we're just going to see the pack mate in our cascade lists. We're going to see the dual lands in Skred and Snuff Out decks. I think Hold the Multiverse is very important in anything playing blue, obviously. And yeah. I think that's it. I think Bind the Monster will be played maybe in the sideboard of mono blue decks.
Yeah, I can't really imagine it being main board. It's very risky.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of situations where it's just kind of dead. But again, it is an option. I think Masked Vandal is good in Slivers, but that requires you to play Slivers. I think Elves.
Why does Slivers... Masked Vandal is the Rexage, right?
Yeah.
So why does Slivers need that?
It doesn't unless there's a Boros meta.
Oh, just to blow up lands? Or, like, Journeys?
Yeah, blowing up Journeys, and also... it's less... It also Bonders. You can technically blow up... Especially Bonders in the... like land destruction or Tron match or land destruction matchup, because blowing up a Bonders there is often more impactful than doing one in Tron. Though again, taking out a Prism or Bonders against Tron is no slouch, like is a small feat, because that can just swing you a game.
So my idea here is that my Jeskai list, the green Jeskai list, should not even be playing Bonders Ornament, because, or even a regular Jeskai list, because even though it ramps you, everyone wants to kill it. So they're going to be sideboarding in shenanigans. You might as well just play four, Behold the Multiverse.
You could play four and then always side them out. Mm. Then laugh at their smash to smithereens.
Yeah, this is smart. So I think it'll be interesting to see how things develop. One other thing that I'm kind of excited about is that, along with receiving my Gorilla Shaman avatar for the 2020 Popper Showcase Premium, whatever, it looks like, if you look in the avatars on Magic Online, that there's a slot for 2021. So I'd like to see if that actually is going to occur and kind of watch the meta develop around that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty sweet. Yeah. I think Behold the Multiverse, it's definitely a stronger card than I and many others kind of gave it when it came out. But I don't think it's one of those cards where it's going to like change the meta. It's just going to improve decks that are already strong, or just give them better matchups, or reinforce leads
I think it changes how the blue mirrors are played, because now there's like a lot of like, when do I jam this, and do I counter it? Do I not counter it? Like, there's a lot more thought involved, and it's like a lot easier to kind of force action, which may or may not be good.
Yeah, I think, but yeah, then again, like that's in like blue mirrors. So I don't know. Like,
it's not super good against aggro, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't know like how the matchup stats shift just based on running it. But again, like that's the thing, like it improves certain matchups that may already be favorable or may already be like even.
I guess anytime you want to be playing instants like removal or anything like that, then hold is good. I mean, I wouldn't splash for it in Stompy.
I really need to cut Elephant Guide. You gotta
Do you think that you could put in Pac-Mate over Elephant Guide?
I've thought about this, and I don't think so. I think...
Because there's no card advantage in Stompy. There's just tempo advantage.
But I think the big thing that kind of sinks it for me is that you need... The thing about Elephant Guide is it's the top of your curve. It follows up, and it strengthens your turn two play. Like, even if you put it on, like, a creature you played turn one, or you only played one creature held up like hunger or vines, it increases the power of your turn two play, basically making it impact and be effective immediately. Ideally, other times they just remove your creature and two for one you and take all your three mana and you feel sad and because you didn't have anything else to play in your hand. But
Pac-Man is definitely a mid-range card.
Yeah, it's just too slow. You can cast it, you can foretell it off of Burning Tree, but I don't think there's a single, obviously there is a situation, but I don't think it's very likely that I would be foretelling that off of Burning Tree Emissary when I could cast a 2-drop off of Burning Tree Emissary.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what sinks it for me. Like, yeah, it can have synergy, but it's just not going to be more powerful than something else I could do in that slot.
So, how do you feel about the Pauper format in terms of bans? Do you think that Tron is too powerful, that Monarch is gross, or it's all just kind of balanced out at this point because Ponce is there? Do we need a reset back to 2017 where it's just like Boros Monarch?
It's one of those things where, like, when Gush was banned, like, blue is good. Blue is never not going to be good.
Yeah.
And Gush was banned. So, like, yeah, it removes this kind of gameplay pattern and aspect, but it's not, like, removing anything. Whereas, like, removing the Monarch, Boros can go back to the old, like, solely Metalcraft plan. But, like, it's a very different deck. And, like, if you take Tron out of Tron, which is the only way to nerf Tron, it's never going to work if you try and ban around it.
Yep, you want Tron gone, you have to get rid of the lands. It's not going to do anything. There's no other way.
Yeah, get rid of Bonder's Ornament. People were already playing Signet. Like, again, it might not be as strong initially, but that's the thing that's so good about Tron, is it's so flexible because you just have big mana, and big mana can cast anything.
In a world where the best creatures are, like, 1 and 2 mana, if you have the ability to play something that costs 5, like a Moldrifter, off 3 lands or 2 lands, it's a big deal. Because instead of playing Core Skyfisher or, like you said, Burning Tree or Nest Invader, you can play a Moldrifter, which is a 3-for-1.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's crazy. Yeah. I'd say we can't see any bans without Tron and or the Monarch going.
It's interesting that Tron and
Monarch going, I think.
I feel like Tron is, if they banned it, I don't think anybody would be surprised because of the win rate and just the power level of the deck. Like, I think in a competent hand, it's a tier 0.
Absolutely.
But then if Tron is gone and if Monarch is gone, then we just have, like, Fae is still there because nothing is gone from Fae. It's just Thorn or Azure are gone, but they can play like 4 Behold, or they can play like AKs and stuff.
They have replacements.
And they have Ninja, and they have like Snuff and Scred. And then it becomes like aggro and Jeskai Ephemerate the format, which is interesting. But, you know, I think Pauper players get annoyed when they get locked out of the game. And I think, from my own perspective, I see that in cards like Tron or the Monarch or even Ephemerate. And I mean, to a lesser extent, something like Ninja or Swipe or just Bogles, the hexproof stuff.
People not liking Swipe? I don't know what you're talking about. Everyone seems like, so happy when I Savage Swipe their Augur Bolas.
It's always funny when you're like, you kept 7, you had 3 swipes. How did this happen? How did you keep three swipes? Yeah, should I just not have played anything? Then I would be totally fine. You would have gotten me down to 14 by turn four. Instead, I'm at zero.
That's the trick. It's you just gotta always have it or always pretend that you have it.
Yeah. Well, for me, I basically never pretend. I just always have it. The best is like blatantly saying, if you sprite this, I will counter it, and then they sprite it and then I counter it. Like, okay, yeah. Well, I said I would.
Told you. Yeah, no, yeah. I do have a tendency to get very lucky, but I also my die roll win rate is I think 80-20.
Well, there you go. That's why you should be playing aggro for sure.
Yeah. I just
you're gonna win the die roll.
No, I never win the die roll.
Oh. Oh
no. Sorry, 20-80.
Well, I wouldn't do it that way then.
Draws. I'll never have them on turn one.
Well, at least you'll play first to game two.
And well, that is why I like. That's why swipe is so good for me. You don't need. It's honestly better turn two on the draw. So.
Ooh, that's true as well.
Yeah. No.
Hmm.
It's significantly better turn two on the draw. It's significantly better after their turn two.
That's interesting. So what you're saying is that stompy players should choose to draw.
Always. you should choose to draw, play four elephant guys.
I've learned a lot.
I want to get to the point where I can just give bad advice. Well, give bad advice and have people take it.
I think the only way to do that in reality is to make a bad deck and win the challenge.
Yeah.
Just by pure luck or skill or just like overwhelming skill, because Pauper as a online format, it's a lot of copy paste with the Magic Online deck lists.
I remember I think it was one of my older top eights. I think it was with a stompy list where after I top eighted, I immediately went on the Reddit like results where people like were talking about it, and I just said, don't play this list. There's so much wrong with it. I like there is so many things that I would change. It's not even funny. Yeah. I'll have to figure out what deck list it was.
I ended up making a 5-0 with Rainbow Familiars without putting any like Reaping the Graves or anything like that in the main, and also accidentally putting a 14 card sideboard. So I was hoping that would get posted just for the confusion.
Yeah, that was, I remember that. Was that the day before the Super PTQ?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Whoops.
Yeah, I remember I only top 32'd, but Eli Silva actually, or was it Eli Silva? Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. Top 8'd with Ramirez De Pietro in the sideboard. He was watching my stream before the challenge where I was running in the sideboard, and he agreed to do it.
Because he can't get cast down.
Yeah, that's why I said he can't get cast down. And they can't kill it off of two fiery cannonades now that that's downshifted.
They can't snuff out it. So exactly. It's like invincible in Pauper.
It's the perfect card. man.
I think we should start wrapping it up, but I think it'll be interesting to see how the Pauper meta develops and what we can kind of talk about moving forward.
Yeah, I think we're definitely at a point. Because, again, Fall From Favor was banned not too long ago. We got a new set. I think it's definitely at a point where things can shake out differently, especially with all the powerful cards from Commander, and we're kind of off of a pretty big meta shift in general. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how things settle. I think we're kind of seeing how things are going to settle, but anything can happen. I certainly didn't expect to have like 12 tons of pilots in a challenge, but here we are.
Yeah, we had, I think, 5 Cascade lists in the last dump, so we'll see how many Snowlands are around in the next one. That's going to start getting pretty popular. I'd expect to see Jeskai Ephemerate come back a little bit.
We'll see. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
I saw Sandpop put 63 cards in his Tron deck. So people are doing wild things.
That's the problem with Tron, is you'll run out of space to put all the broken stuff.
All right. Diego, if anybody wants to find your YouTubes or your Twitter, where can they get that?
You can find it at Diego Brando MTG on YouTube. I also stream on Twitch, same thing, all one word. I am usually on every Sunday, streaming the challenge at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. I think I have a 50% win, do incredibly well, or scrub out rate. Yeah, if you want to see either of those things.
Nice. If anybody wants to find me, my YouTube is youtube.com/KaliKaiz, which is KaliKaiz. And that's where I put all my familiars videos, a couple of videos of other like wacky blue decks too. So, and then I'm on Twitter at JAKEALS. So I'm kind of keeping people updated with my deck list and stuff there. So I think that's going to do it for today. Thanks everybody for joining us, and we'll see you on the next one.
Bye.